Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Disrespect, so when I bust my rhyme, you break your neck. We got 5 minutes for us to disconnect.
All the band is out on the field. He's looking for the ball. We are so away from tradition, because when we be out, girl, it's full of that. Smith caught him right down the line. It may go. Go crazy, folks.
Let's get into it. Pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo.
Welcome aboard to the Sportsnet and Bubba and Xander. Xander, what's up, my brother?
Not much. Just getting ready for that NCAA tournament. Got a lot of good stuff going on this week. You know, and one of the things I really wanted to talk about was with Peyton Manning finally decided to call it quits and retire this past week. And, you know, really not much to say about the guy besides that, you know, he's arguably the greatest quarterback to ever live. I don't know if I'd put him up there in total, but in terms of regular season play, I mean, I think you can easily make a case that he is the best. A class act on and off the field. I mean, the guy was really one of the first great quarterbacks I ever got to watch as a football fan. I can still remember, you know, one of my first times playing fantasy football in our neighborhood league. Got the opportunity to draft Peyton Manning at number two, and he ended up breaking the single-season touchdown record that year. Just a pure joy to watch. Did a lot of great things. And, you know, what were your thoughts on his career?
Yeah, I mean, he's great. He may be the greatest of all time. He's certainly one of the greatest tacticians of all time. He certainly worked harder than anybody else. You know, we talked about this before with other athletes. You know, typically the best also work the hardest. I think that he is arguably the best, but it's hard to change eras. Right now, I don't know. Who do you know, in a big game, do you take Tom Brady or do you take Peyton Manning? Because those are the two comparable right now. Who do you take for the Super Bowl? Who's your guy?
My guy, I think I'd have to go with Tom Brady. I think he's had a little more success in the playoffs. Although, I mean, he is 2-3 against Peyton Manning. But, I mean, you look at Peyton Manning this past year, I mean, that team was really carried by the defense. And you know, I don't want to take anything away from him winning that Super Bowl. But, I mean, that was one of the best defenses of all time. And that really showed in that game against Carolina, because Peyton Manning did not have, you know, a great season or postseason. But, you know, he was at the helm of that team. So, I mean, you can't take that away from him. But, you know, if I had to take an overall picture, I think I would rather have Tom Brady, you know, if I'm in the playoffs. And also, I mean, another guy I think I would rank ahead of Peyton. We're talking about all-time greats. I think Joe Montana, I think I might have to put up in number one with his 4 Super Bowls. But, I mean, Peyton, it just an unbelievable talent, and just the way that he carried himself, and then the way it was really different to watch than anybody I've ever seen. I mean, the adjustments, you know, he was able to make the line of scrimmage. That was always the most fun, I think, about Peyton Manning. I mean, watching the Colts play and even watching the Broncos play these past few years, just watching what that guy was able to do, you know, on the field, pre-snap, you know, with 20 seconds left on the play clock. I mean, I'll really never forget it. And I think the NFL is losing a great, great talent. And I think he's still going to be around the game, so I don't think we've heard the last from Peyton Manning. You know, I look at him possibly to take a job in the front office. I mean, I could see him being heavily recruited to be some sort of analyst on whatever network, you know, he chooses to work with. But I think he'll definitely be around the game. I think he should be.
Omaha. No, he is great, and it's sad to see him go on Monday. And I'm happy, as you and I talked about last week, that we thought that he should go. So I'm happy he did go, because he's, you know, he certainly stunk his last year, but they won the Super Bowl, and that's all that really counts. At the end of the day, you know, one thing about a football player versus other sports, you know, in basketball, the guy is involved in everything. In baseball, pitcher every fifth day. But in football, the guy's only part of a big cog. And he was great. He was unbelievable. And I would agree with you that If I was going for one game, I'd probably take Tom Brady because Tom Brady has had just a little bit more success. Now, again, it's always hard to tell because this is where all the other pieces of the puzzle come in. You know, did Peyton Manning make a better team, make a bad team great? Okay. Who's got better pieces? And you can never decide. They're both great. I think that Peyton Manning will be around the game. I think Peyton Manning will probably eventually be an owner, would be my guess. But he's certainly a class act, and I'm certainly glad to see the way he went out. And I think everybody is thrilled, especially Denver, because they didn't want to look like they're schmucks who had to cut him. So I think it was great, and he was a great career. And again, you could take Joe Montana. Terry Bradshaw was 4-for-4 in the Super Bowl. So, there's a lot of guys that you can say, and if you compare it with just a big game, obviously Montana and Bradshaw have to be there. But the game has obviously changed so much over the years. Brady and Manning, they throw more passes a week than some guy used to throw in a year. So, it's a whole different ball game. But either way, class act, will be around the game, I'm sure, and just a phenomenal talent. And again, you got to respect him for all the hard work he put in because nobody worked harder in the film or anything else. What do you think about that?
Yeah, you got to respect everything that he did. And I think this works out well for both parties because, like you said, I don't think the Broncos wanted to be the bad guys here. But, it was hard to argue after last season that Peyton Manning, deserved a spot on an NFL team anymore just based off his play. I think that leaves the Broncos in a pretty good spot here. We saw Brock Osweiler in his limited capacity last year was able to do some pretty decent things for a young quarterback. So I think their first step has got to be to resign him because, you need a quarterback to win in today's league. And with that great of a defense in Denver, they're going to have a chance to get right back up as another Super Bowl champion. So I think that's got to be the first priority. And one last thing I wanted to say about Manning, we talked about comparing him and Tom Brady, and I thought this was a great quote about Peyton Manning from Tom Brady. He said, "To me, he's the greatest of all time. What he's accomplished and the way that he studies, the way he prepares. He's really got a killer instinct, too. I've been fortunate to be around him on a lot of occasions, and we always hit it off. We've had a great relationship, and he's a friend of mine and someone that I always watch and admire because he always wants to improve. He always wants to get better, and he doesn't settle for anything less than the best." So, what a way to go out to be complimented by, the guy you've been compared against the most throughout your career. Class act by both guys, and, right, so we're moving on from Peyton Manning. There's no more.
No, it's true. Now, the thing is what do you think Brock Osweiler is going to stay with Denver? He's a free agent. He can go out elsewhere now. What do you think they're going to do with him?
I think they're going to try to keep him at all costs. Trying to start over again with a quarterback, as we've seen in the NFL in recent years, it can be a huge struggle. Some guys hit it off and do great, and some guys, just flat out fail. There's no perfect script of how to, make a quarterback work in your system, but you got to figure that a guy who showed some good things this year has worked under Peyton Manning for the past 4 years. It's going to be a top priority. So I think there's no way that the Broncos let Brock Osweiler walk. I just don't think it makes any sense.
I agree, but things always come down, as we know, things always come down to money, and we'll see what they do and how they handle it. And of course, I think that the Denver's a great franchise, always has been, going back to the John Elway days, and pretty class act. So I'm sure they'll be in good shape, and I'm sure they'll figure out a way to keep Osweiler. I'm surprised Osweiler would want to try to go elsewhere when he's in such a good situation where he's at. But we'll see how it plays out. He's got some time. We haven't even gotten to the draft yet, so we'll see how that all plays out. This is The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander, and we want to remind you, should you ever miss an episode, every episode is available to you at libertytalk.fm on demand. Also, we want to remind you that the fantasy season is upon us, and we're going to help you run through baseball fantasy. This is The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. We will be back after the break with Sporting Edge.
Mike, you don't get my soul, do you?
Technically, no, but...
Welcome back to The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. So, Xander, what a parlay you would have had last week, and if you'd have bet the two dogs in the UFC fight and the Los Angeles Lakers, $100 would have got you $31,000 for that three-team dog parlay. What'd you think of all that stuff?
Well, I mean, first off, I'm a very big UFC fan. I mean, obviously, I don't follow every little thing about it, but when the big fights are on, I love to watch. And this past Saturday, I watched both of those fights with Conor McGregor and Holly Holm, and man, it was awesome. It was so impressive that both of those underdogs, who were huge underdogs, might I add. I mean, they were both Misha Tate and Nate Diaz were 4-1 underdogs, and you think about, you know, in a fight like that, I mean, that is a huge underdog, and what both those people were able to do was unreal. I think it really, in the end, I think it's bad for the UFC that, you know, both of those champions lost, because Holly Holm, I mean, just came off beating Ronda Rousey, and, you know, I thought that was also bad for the UFC, because as you're watching a sport that's about combat to combat, you want to see, you know, those people who are just seen so much better than everybody else that can kick anybody's ass at any time. They're just so polarizing that it's hard. You know, when Ronda Rousey gets beat and everybody thought she was the greatest, you know, female fighter in the history of the planet, when she gets beat, it's tough to make another name. And then with Holly Holm beating her and then getting, you know, choked out by submission in the fifth round on Saturday, I think it's a money loser for the UFC, and I think this sets up, you know, Misha Tate coming back and fighting Ronda Rousey for a title rematch. But, I mean, a lot of great things happened in that fight. I mean, Holly Holm is a great, probably the best female kickboxer in the world at that weight, and I think that was probably her weakness in that match. I mean, she wasn't able to stay on her feet enough with Misha Tate, and Misha Tate is one of the best grapplers in women's UFC. So we saw that she was able to get Holly Holm on the ground and ended up choking her out in the fifth round, and there was really nothing that Holly Holm could do about it. So, I mean, congratulations to her. That was a great fight. But, I mean, the fight I want to talk the most about is the Conor McGregor-Nate Diaz fight. I mean, if you've even been around sports at all for the past 4 months, you've definitely heard Conor McGregor's name. The guy's in the news all the time. One of the biggest trash talkers I've ever seen. I mean, the amount of pre-fight press conferences that happened where he was talking, you know, so much shit to Nate Diaz and just about everybody in the UFC. It's the kind of guy that you really either love him or you hate him. And me personally, as a sports fan and a guy who still plays sports a little bit, I'm not the biggest fan of trash talking, you know. I just like to go about my business and do what I have to do. But, I mean, I definitely see from a business standpoint that's a main thing with UFC. I mean, you don't get fights every – it's not like the Major League Baseball where you're playing games every day. I mean, these big fight cards happen 3 or 4 times a year, so you need some way to cover all the press, and you need guys like Conor McGregor to go out and be those villains. And everybody, you know, whether they like him or not, they're going to watch him. If he's on the radio, you know, if you love him or you hate him, you're going to get more viewers that hate him listening to him than guys who like him. And, you know, I didn't really like him that much before the fight, and I have to say I was really impressed with how he handled the defeat. I mean, he was supposed to step in at 155 pounds to fight Rafael Dos Anjos, and he ended up clocking out of that card with a broken foot, so he decided that he would fight a challenger, Nate Diaz, in the 170-pound division to possibly get a shot at Robbie Lawler for the championship. And if you think about that, a guy who fights at 145 pounds, moving up to 170 pounds, I mean, that's a lot of weight. And I think Conor McGregor is probably still one of the greatest pound-for-pound fighters in the world, but in this particular fight, against the bigger man in Nate Diaz, I think McGregor said it best. He did not use his energy efficiently, and Nate Diaz was able to withstand a lot of his punches that he threw in the first round, because that first round was dominated by McGregor. And eventually, you know, when he wasn't able to knock him off his feet, Nate Diaz, you know, one of the best jiu-jitsu guys in the 170-pound division, was eventually just able to clock him out, landed a few good punches, and ended up knocking him out. So, I mean, it was a great fight. Like I said, I don't think it was great for the UFC, because when a guy that polarizing loses, it's hard to build that reputation back up. But I do have to give Conor McGregor a lot of credit for the way he handled the loss. You know, he said, you know, I took a gamble and I lost. You know, I'm not going to apologize. I'm not going to hide in defeat. I'm still a champion, and that's the way I'm going to handle my business. I think that's really admirable of him. I mean, you think about a guy who just lost the biggest fight of his life. The polarization is just not there anymore, because when a guy like that loses, you kind of lose all faith. And, you know, this guy was supposed to be a monster above men and ended up not working out. But I really have to give the guy credit to saying, you know, to the fans, I never shy away from my challenges. Never will I shy away from adversity. I'm going to face this head on. And, you know, he says, Nate Diaz, I will see you again. And I think this is really interesting, because he has a few few options here. He can rematch Diaz, but I don't think is going to happen right now. He can go back down to 145, and I think a rematch between him and Jose Aldo would be really interesting because he knocked him out in, you know, 7 or 8 seconds a few months ago. He could also move down to 155 and try to challenge for that championship, but a lot of interesting things going on in the UFC right now because we also have John Jones coming back soon, who's the light heavyweight champion in the world and probably the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. So a lot of great things happening in the UFC right now. A couple of great fights we had this past weekend, and I think, you know, this sets up an even bigger fight card the next time out.
So you didn't think that McGregor handled it like Cam Newton handled losing the Super Bowl?
No, not at all. And that was what kind of surprised me. I mean, with the amount of crap this guy talked, I was wondering how he would handle defeat. And I have a lot of respect for him, a lot more respect for him now than I did before. And I thought this was another great quote after his loss. He said, "I stormed in and put it all on the line. I took a shot and I missed. I will never apologize for taking a shot. Shit happens. I will take this loss like a man. I will not shy away from it. I will not change who I am." So, I mean, that just kind of shows you what kind of person Conor McGregor is. I mean, he was willing to go out and say that he was going to kick the crap out of this guy, and he didn't. He lost, but he took it like a man. He put on his suit, went to the post-fight press conference, answered every question that they asked him, you know, didn't shy away from anything. And I think that's one of the great things about being a professional athlete is, you know, how you handle adversity is almost as important as how you handle, you know, victory. So we'll see where he comes back from here, but I don't think this is the end of Conor McGregor. I think it's just the beginning of an illustrious career and a guy who has a lot of passion and is a great fighter.
You know, it's always easy to win. It's easy to be the nice guy when you're winning, and it's not so easy to be a stand-up guy when you're losing. So you got to give him a lot of credit. I think that, you know, that shows that he's a true athlete, a true competitor who's out there to win, but will step up and congratulate somebody who beat him. And you got to respect that out of a man or a woman, because that is what it's about. It's not, you know, once the competition's over, it's how you handle the rest of it. And that's, you know, one of the things that is important, and you've always watched it. You know, nobody should be happy about losing, but you have to be able to step up and handle what goes on after you lose. And I think that he did a great job. And again, UFC is becoming bigger and bigger. I mean, hell, they got it on FanDuel and DraftKings as well. So, I mean, this is only a sport that's growing faster and faster all the time. So, you know, I give him credit for stepping up and saying, "Hey, I lost, and that's it." I mean, again, I took a shot, didn't work, and, you know, that's what happens. And, you know, God bless him for being a man. And now we got the other big upset of the weekend was the Lakers beating the Golden State Warriors as an 18-point underdog. They beat them, and they drilled them. What did you think of the game?
I mean, it was awful. It was probably the worst game I've ever seen Golden State play. I mean, the turnovers, 20 turnovers in one game, going 4 for 30 from three-point range, kind of unthinkable. I mean, it was the first time that a sub-200 team beat a plus-900 team in NBA history, and the game wasn't close from the start.
After the Lakers,
the interesting thing about it, go ahead.
Hey, we'll get that after the break, but after the Lakers took the lead, 22-21 in the first quarter, the game was basically over. It was amazing. This is The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander, and we ought to remind you, if you ever miss an episode, you go to libertytalk.fm. Every show is there on demand. We also want to remind you that we will probably do some special shows during the tournament to keep you updated, because obviously the tournament is wild, and it goes Thursday, Friday for the first couple of weeks, so we'll try to shoot in. Maybe we'll throw in a segment in the Bubba show for you, just to have you up to date at our investment ideas. And we do these things. We're going to step out here for a break. Make sure you check out the Bubba show when you get a chance, and also BubbaTrading.com. That's where we teach you how to trade and how to do some regular investing as well. This is The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. We're going to step out here for a break, and we will be right back after the break. The Sporting Edge.
trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you, give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Welcome back to the Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. So, Xander, you had a comment on the game. Well, go ahead and take it away, brother.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I thought it was interesting that on the 61st game of the season, we saw the Warriors got beat by the Lakers by, I think, 17 or 18 points. And actually, during the Bulls' 95-96 72-win campaign, they got beat by the New York Knicks by 31 points on their 61st game. So I thought that was a pretty crazy stat. I mean, if you think about it, that both teams, one had six losses, one had 10 losses for the entire year, that on their 61st games they'd be beat so bad by such brutal teams. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, it is. And of course, what I think is really interesting all of a sudden is look who's just a couple of games behind for the entire best record in basketball, the San Antonio Spurs, tra-la, tra-la. What do you think about those babies?
Well, I mean, I think I've said this before on this show. I mean, the Spurs are constantly overshadowed by the Warriors, and I don't think they really care about it. I mean, the Spurs go about their business every year basically the same way, and the fact that the Warriors were coming off an NBA championship and started off so hot, it kind of didn't leave any room for any other talk about the Spurs. So, I mean, it is interesting that the Spurs are really only a few games behind the Warriors, and before you know it, they might end up having a better record than them at the end of the year, but For these two teams, it doesn't really matter that much besides for namesake of having the record. Both these teams are going to meet in the playoffs.
Well, what I find interesting about San Antonio is, you know, they half the time they don't have their guys playing and they still win. I mean, they haven't lost a game at home. They keep winning, and, you know, they got guys sitting out all the time, and yet, and that just, I think that says, obviously, as you've said, Popovich is probably one of the best coaches ever. And, of course, there you go, because he just continues to bring it. And, you know, I think it's all about the West. I think that, you know, the East is, you know, I don't think Cleveland's anything. I mean, I think LeBron, as we said last week, was basically, you know, in my opinion, I don't know. I don't have much respect for him anymore. The Bulls are hanging on. They might not even make the playoffs this year all of a sudden with all their injuries. And it just goes to show you what lousy coaching will do for a team. But we are into March Madness, of course, this weekend. We're going through the tournaments right now, a lot of the conference tournaments. And what do you expect? Do you expect any major surprises? Obviously, there's a lot of teams on the bubble, and they need a lot of things to fall their way. Are you expecting anything crazy here, or what's your view?
Well, I mean, I think every year conference play, there's always, you know, a couple teams that pull some major upsets to get to the tournament. I mean, you got a lot of good brackets. I mean, one of them I'm looking right now is at the ACC bracket. I mean, you got 1, 2, 3, 4. You got North Carolina, Virginia, Miami, and Notre Dame, followed by you get Duke, Virginia Tech, Clemson, Pittsburgh. So I think the ACC will probably be one of the better conference tournaments. I think probably the top 5 or 6 teams in that bracket will make the tournament, whether they win it or not. I mean, a lot of automatic bids there. Another tournament I'm looking at is the Big Ten. I think Maryland, I really think they're going to win the Big Ten tournament. That's kind of my surprise pick. of the tournament sweepstakes, but, I mean, Michigan State is going to be tough to beat.
Well, I mean, they did just knock off Michigan State, so you know, that certainly wouldn't be a total shock. You know, I've seen some of the brackets, you know, the projected brackets, and, you know, I'll tell you something. I don't understand Joe Lunardi's number one seeds. I mean, I don't see Villanova and Virginia as a number one seed. What about you?
I really don't. To me, it doesn't really matter where those two teams are ranked. I just don't. They haven't proven to me, you know, in the past decade that they've been able to get it done, you know, during crunch time. I mean, so, you know, whether he's got them ranked number one or not, it's kind of immaterial to me. I think Michigan State and Kansas are pretty decent one seeds, according to me. And, you know, I don't know who else is going to make it.
Well, he's not even showing Michigan State as a one seed. So that's what I find, you know, interesting. I mean, you know, I find it curious, you know, that how they rank some of these. And of course, you know, there's a lot of teams on the bubble, and it'll be these conference tournaments will be, you know, big. And of course, the teams that are on the bubble, the big teams that are on the bubble, will be hoping that the favorite or the team who won the regular season title will win their conference title, because that opens up more spots, you know, in it. But, you know, I think that obviously Kansas number one and North Carolina, as you predicted, North Carolina would beat Duke the other day, and of course they did. You know, are you looking for any major shocks here? You have any things in your mind? You're looking for anything in particular? I mean, I still believe Michigan State wins it all. That's my take, and I think you're seeing, you know, some teams starting to wilt, and I think that's going to be, you know, part of, you know, what goes on here is we go and teams start to, you know, you really see who's deep enough to go all the way through.
Right. I think, Michigan State and Kansas, to me, are two very scary teams, but they're right at the top. But a couple other teams I look for, I think Xavier has quietly had an unbelievable year. I mean, they're ranked in the top five right now, in the AP top 25. I think they're a team to look out for. Another team that I just brought up again, Maryland. I think they're going to make a deep run in the tournament. You know, teams like Villanova, Virginia, I don't see them getting too far. I mean, they could surprise me, but I really don't see it. And another team is Oklahoma. I think with a guy like Buddy Hield, who's a senior, done a lot of great things in his career, I think they're also a team to watch out for. So we got a lot of interesting things, and I think the next time we do the show, I think we should be a day away or so from Selection Sunday, so we'll have pretty much everything you need, except for a couple bubble teams to get ready for the tournament.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think that you know, as we move on now, and of course for now, you know, obviously baseball is in not full bloom, but certainly we're gaining quickly on the baseball season, and of course, I think it's only right that we should probably, you know, look at, you know, who we believe are the top guys, and you know, look at, you know, the early things. But I think the biggest thing first was Ian Desmond. I think this guy's gonna have a monster year this year. I mean, he blew his free agent year, but now he finally got on a team. I think he has a monster year this year. What do you think?
I think he's gonna have a really good year. I think last year struggled a lot during his contract year. Shortstop, one of the rare guys in the game with a lot of power, you know, along with a lot of other tools, and I think maybe that pressure got to him a little bit. I don't really know what happened, but he had a really solid few years before that, so it didn't really make much sense. I think he bounces back, and, you know, I really liked him. You had him a couple of years ago on your team, and I think he hit, you know, 20-plus home runs. He's a great talent. So he's a guy I look to have a big year, and I thought today we'd go a little bit, talk about some first baseman rankings. I think it's probably the most loaded position in the draft. And, you know, I wanted to go over my top five and see what you thought about it. My first guy is got to be Paul Goldschmidt of the Diamondbacks. You know, this guy bounced back from his 2014 wrist injury and, you know, had one of the best seasons, you know, in the MLB last year. I mean, I think this guy is a lock to hit at least 315 and hit 35 home runs. An unbelievable talent playing in a small market in Arizona. We'll get a ton of at-bats and, you know, probably hitting the three-hole. My second guy is kind of my poor man's version of Paul Goldschmidt, is Anthony Rizzo. He's still an elite player, and I think he's getting better in an improving Cubs lineup. I mean, the more pieces you add to the lineup, the harder it makes it to pitch around a guy like Rizzo. I mean, this guy is also A guy who could flirt with 20 steals this year. So, I mean, you look at fantasy value, a first baseman swiping 20 bags. I mean, that's pretty awesome. My number three guy is Miguel Cabrera. Obviously, I think on the back end of his prime, if he's not already, you know, taking a little dip, but, you know, even last year he hit 338, so, I mean, I can't really say much bad about that, but he is going to turn 33 this year, and, you know, I don't know if he's going to flash as much power, but at least 30 home runs, I'm thinking. My fourth guy is Edwin Encarnacion of the Blue Jays. This is really up for debate. You know, Edwin Encarnacion, there's only one other guy that has more home runs than him in the past 3 years, and that's Chris Davis with 159, or excuse me, 4 years. Encarnacion has 151. So when you think about that power, I mean, it's very exciting for a first baseman. You know, he's pretty much a lock for 90 runs and 100 RBIs. And this Toronto offense is very high-powered again in a pretty good hitter's park, so I think if he stays healthy, then he'll have a big year. My fifth guy is Jose Abreu of the White Sox. This is kind of a toss-up between Joey Votto and Jose Abreu. I think they're both 5 and 6, whichever way you want to put them, but I think Abreu's got a chance to hit a few more home runs, have a couple more RBIs. That's why I'm ranking him ahead. So I said, that's a look at my first baseman for this year. And, you know, they're loaded. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, no, I do. But, I mean, Miguel's going to start at third base this year, but we'll see. I mean, he looks healthy. He looks good. He's in the best shape he's been in a long time. And I think out of that group, I love them all. But I think Abreu is going to be the guy. I think he's going to come back as he did in his rookie year and really lay him away. But I do like them all. I mean, I couldn't go wrong with having any one of those guys on my team. I'm not as big of a Votto fan because he's always injured. And he doesn't have quite the same power numbers as the rest. But certainly, you know, wouldn't be the end of the world if I got stuck with him. But again, I look at guys, especially for my league, you know, it's about injury too. And if they ain't playing, they can't score. So we'll come back and look at the rest when we come back from the break. This is The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. Make sure if you miss an episode, libertytalk.fm will get you all the episodes that you want. And this is The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. We will be back after the break, and we'll cover some more baseball for you. The Sporting Edge. Welcome back to The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. So, Xander, what do you think? What's the next position you want to cover, young man?
Well, I thought, you know, since we did a little offense, thought I'd move to a little defense and go over some starting pitchers this year. You know, we talked about this guy for the past couple weeks, and I think I still got to keep him at number one, and that's Clayton Kershaw of the Dodgers. I don't think there's been a more consistent regular season pitcher in the majors over the past 6 years, and, you know, I don't see that really changing. Clayton Kershaw was still pretty damn good last year. Didn't have his best season statistically, but I have him ranked number one because I think, you know, although the Dodgers did lose Zach Greinke, and I kind of ragged on him a little bit a couple weeks ago, they still have a lot of great pitching and some good offense on that team. So I think they're going to be a lock for at least 85 or 90 wins. And I think Clayton Kershaw goes out there, makes all of his starts. He's notoriously pretty healthy. I remember a couple years ago, missed about the first 2 months of the season. But other than that, he's my number one guy. My number two guy is Max Scherzer. Over the past 2 years, I think I'd have to put him as the best pitcher in baseball. And this Washington team was a huge disappointment last year, but I think they turn around and right ship a little bit this year. It's going to be tough in a division with the Mets, but even if they come in second place and win, you know, in the upwards of 80, 90 games, I think Max Scherzer probably takes about 20 of those wins because he's just that good. His stuff has been that electric over the past couple years. My third guy, I think this guy could probably make a push for number one, considering what he did last year, is Jake Arrieta. I think the Cubs, everybody's talking about, are the best team in the majors right now. I mean, they've got an unbelievable lineup. And I think when Jake Arrieta was on the mound last year, we saw how great the Cubs played. I mean, all around, the guy throws strikes, gets people out, has a great cutter. I mean, he's around the strike zone, throws not too hard, but he's in the mid-90s, so there's nothing wrong with that. I think Jake Arrieta makes a push for 20 wins as well. My fourth guy, and this guy, I love him, but I'm not sure how the team is going to be. I think they're going to be good this year, but we talked about him last year. It's Chris Sale of the Chicago White Sox. I mean, probably the most devastating left-handed fastball in the league right now. I mean, I would not want to face him if I was a left-handed batter, but, I mean, the guy gets so many strikeouts. I think he'll probably lead the league in K's this year. I mean, his stuff is that dirty, kind of a funky delivery, funky arm angle. But the last couple of years, been very consistent, and I love him. I think he's a great pitcher. My fifth guy, the postseason man himself, Madison Bumgarner. I think this Giants team is going to win their division this year. Don't think the Dodgers are going to be too close to them. I think this Dodgers team is going to, excuse me, I think this Giants team is going to surprise a lot of people and really come out swinging. I think they're going to get the Cubs and run for their money as the best team in the majors this year. I like Madison Bumgarner because he's just such a gamer. There's a lot of great things, and he's very consistent. So that's my top five pitchers. Anybody else you want to talk about starting pitchers?
Yeah, I mean, I like Bumgarner. Probably, he's probably my number one because first of all, I think he's on a better team than Kershaw this year. And number two, and number three, I think that that he's always out there. And I also I think Arrieta is going to be a bomb this year. My opinion. Okay, I think that he's had trouble. He's 30 years old. Maybe he won't be. I hope he. Listen, obviously I'm a Cub fan, so I hope he's not. But I think that he might be a little bit of a nightmare. I like in that top group. Okay, I think that you want to look at. I'm losing my mind here. Hold on, I had a brain cramp here, so I'll get back to that. But I think that when you look at him, I think that you have to say. That Arrieta, I mean, again, I hope he will. I think David Price is going to have a monster year with Boston. I think he's going to shine and he's going to really lay it out there. And that's what I think about the pitching. But I'm in pretty much of an agreement, but also looking for some other guys to step up. Kershaw, I wouldn't mind having Kershaw or Price or Bumgarner with my pick. I'm not an Arrieta guy. I'm not taking him, at least not in the first round. I just think that there's better out there, and 1 year doesn't make a career. And what about outfielders? I think Bryce Harper is going to bomb this year as well. I think that when a guy starts talking about making $400 million, I think that that's not a good sign. I'm still a Trout fan. He's my number one pick if I have it. Okay, but I'm not going to take him number one because I'll drop, but I'll get him later. But I think he's the number one guy in baseball. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he's number one across the board. So consistent. I mean, unbelievable numbers. Probably the best hitter in baseball right now. Bryce Harper, get him ranked at number two. That a lot of sources do. Like I said, I don't think he's going to be number two worthy this year. I think I put him in the top ten. There's some other guys I'm looking at. I think Andrew McCutchen is also one of those guys who's definitely below Trout, but one of the more consistent performers in the league. I think, he's a lock to hit 300, probably swipe 20 or 30 bags, hit 30, maybe 40 home runs, and he's a great player. And the most interesting guy on this list, I think, is Giancarlo Stanton. I mean, I think pure power hitter, this guy's probably the best in baseball, but the key with him is he's got to stay healthy because you can't hit home runs when you're not on the field. So I think when it's all said and done, if Stan can play 145 to 150 games, I think he might end up with the best stats among baseball outfielders. What do you think?
I would think that could be, but I tell you the one wild card, in my opinion, is Cespedes. I mean, he's a monster, and he only signed, although he's got a 3-year contract, and he's got a player option after year one. I think he might have a monster year. I mean, Stanton is by far the best. If you could guarantee me he would stay healthy, I would take him easy number one. But the problem is, and it doesn't matter how, 2 years in a row, he's had two freak accidents, right? One with the ham bone and one with getting hit. So, it's like some guys are just unlucky. What do you think about Cespedes this year?
I like him. I think I put him in my top 10. I think I'd say put him probably about 8 or 9. He was so great last year. I mean, it's hard. It's just hard not to, put him up there. It's just, the fact that he's always moving teams, I don't know, it just gives me an unsettling feeling in my stomach. But, I mean, there's no denying what he did for the Mets the second half of that season. And just, I mean, like a guy who hits for so much power, and you've seen him win a couple of home run derbies. I mean, very electric, and I think he'll probably have a great year. But I really don't see him performing at the 8 or 9 spot in outfield. I think he's probably either going to be number 2 or 3, or probably be down 24, 25. I think this is going to be, a hit or miss year for him. And like you said, with that player option coming up, a lot of incentive to hit 45, 50 home runs this year.
And you could do it there at the park too, because obviously they brought the fence in 2 years ago for Duda, but that didn't help him. But, Cespedes is another animal. Now, What do you think? Is this finally the year that Trumbo, I mean, lives up to his potential? I mean, there's a guy that's been, you know, one time we liked him, we took him in the first round, and now he's like a hanger-oner. But is this the year that Trumbo finally hits in Baltimore and stays healthy for a year?
I don't think so. I think the Trumbo train has passed. We've seen a lot of regression the past few years with him. I remember with the Angel a few years ago, we were talking about him being, you know, one of the better young prospects in baseball. But I don't think this is the year that he gets it done. I don't think that, you know, he's shown that, you know, he's going to get to that next level of player. I think he definitely has the potential, but I don't think this is the year. And I think, you know, maybe he'll hit 15 or 20 home runs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's amazing. I mean, he's been obviously a career disappointment. All the skills in the world. What do you think about Bryant? Our boy Bryant from Chicago. Does he have a big year this year?
I really like Chris Bryant this year. I mean, you talk about second year in the league. You bring up sophomore slumps a little bit, but I think this guy was able to work through a lot of, you know, problems he was having his rookie year. You know, we saw him make a lot of adjustments. You know, by the end of the year, was letting the ball get deep a lot better, and I thought he showed flashed. Always, he has a lot of power. I mean, we've always known that, but he was hitting balls all over the park really well. And I think having that postseason experience, I think he comes back. This Cubs team, a lot of good things happening around the team, and I think, you know, Chris Bryant is an undeniable talent, and I think he's going to have a great year.
I agree. I think he's going to be good this year too, and I think a lot of people are overlooking Nolan Arenado, but we'll get that next week here when we finish up our fantasy selection for the year. This is the Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander, and we will, but this will be posted up on libertytalk.fm on demand for you if you missed it. And what we will do is we will be back next week, same time, same station, here on the Sporting Edge. Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy the tournaments, and we'll be ready for Selection Sunday as well. Everybody have a great weekend. Thank you so much. We'll see you later.
He tried the corner and missed like dolphins can
swim. Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.